So hello everyone, and welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening. Tonight we're going to begin with quote 550, is that right? Let me see. Nope, we need to begin with quote 551. We did 550 last week, I think, as I'm looking at it. It looks familiar. Yep, so we're going to start with 551. Let me get that link for you, and I'll post that in the room. Those of you who happen to be listening on the radio, you can go to rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, and again, the 7 is a digit. It is not spelled out. So that is rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then click on step 3 on the menu bar. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find yourself to 551. And in fact, it looks like there's probably a 551 A, B, and C. So of course, we'll begin with 551 A. And what I would like to do is just start with a bit of silence. So if y'all would join me in the silence, I would appreciate it. Amen. Thank you very much. So I'm going to start by reading quote 551A from the 7 Steps to Awakening. It's at the very bottom of page 95. And these quotes are originally from Sri Muruganar. And this is the quote. As long as we do not free ourselves from the state of inattention, in which the unified state of the self that exists as pure consciousness is subverted through the ego, the state of love that is the fullness of the real, free of all differentiation, will not be experienced in the heart. So that's a very long sentence. Probably my English teacher would have marked it as wrong as a run-on sentence, which is why I'm sure I contemplated it in parts and why we have a 551 A, B, and C. But let me just read the sentence again, and I'll read it slowly. And if it helps you to close your eyes to really hear this sentence, then please close your eyes and listen. As long as we do not free ourselves from the state of inattention, in which the unified state of the self that exists as pure consciousness is subverted through the ego, the state of love that is the fullness of the real, free of all differentiation, will not be experienced in the heart. So that's the Muruganar quote that we're going to look at first. And I'm going to 551A. In my journal, I'll go ahead and just post that link one more time, because I think one or two people have entered the room since I posted it last. This is what I wrote as I contemplated that Muruganar quote. Ego is object focus. Object focus is not focused on objectlessness. Therefore, object focus disregards objectlessness and strengthens ego, object focus, to weaken ego and return to realization of that which is present. Reduce attention on objects. Do not necessarily look for something else to put attention on. become object aware, seeing objects as objects, and then remove attention from them, placing it within the self. One thing that I did today at the retreat, which I've done at other retreats before, and I've done for, I think, at least one of my MPP classes. I can't remember if I've done it for all of them. Is a little exercise, just a real brief little exercise, because, you know, some people have a nice sense, even if there's not a full realization, and even if there's not an ongoing realization of what the true self is. Some people have a nice sense of it. So when you talk about the true self, because they have that sense of it or they have that intuition, there's a clear understanding of what you're talking about. You know, they may still be really focused on the ego and not focused on the self, but at least they really have a true understanding of what you're talking about because they have that sense of the true self. And then there are other people who do not have a sense of the true self at all. It is purely an intellectual, maybe even an imaginary idea. And the only self they have a sense of is the ego self. And I think it's going to be a lot more helpful when we look at this particular journal entry if we have some sense of the self first. And then we can go and look at the journal entry. Now, I can't see you guys, so I'm going to have to trust you on this because I'm going to ask you to do something. And what I'm going to ask you to do is going to cause you a little bit of pain. I want it to actually hurt in order for the exercise to be successful. However, you know, you don't have to worry because you're not going to be going to the hospital or anything like that. So we're going to be looking at pain, but it's harmless pain. Okay? But I do want it to hurt. What I'd like you to do is find a sensitive place on your finger, and I would like you to pinch yourself and continue to pinch yourself. Do not let go until I tell you to, and I want you to cause pain. And then I want you to look at that pain and notice, if you can, that the pain is in the body. And that you are looking at it. Notice what is looking at it. And notice that that which is looking at it experiences no pain. And then you can let go. Okay? So there was pain. There was pain, but the pain was in the body. And hopefully if you did that with me and you looked with me, what you got was the sense of self that could not feel any pain. And yet it was somehow looking or being aware of the pain. Now what this particular journal entry is talking about, when it says ego is object focus, this is really a type of projection where what we do is we take the attention of the mind and we project the attention of the mind completely into an object so that the attention of the mind is so fully absorbed into the object that we do not notice the looker. And that object could be a pain. You could be so, oh my God, I hurt. You know, recently I had two different people in my life who got paper cuts and were, oh my gosh, you know, that really hurts, this paper cut. You know, and in that point, they weren't pausing to be the looker, right? They were just fully projected into the pain and experiencing the pain as if it's me experiencing the pain. It could be an emotion. You know, like depression. You know, you can be looking at depression. The depression can be present, but you can be the looker looking at depression. Or you can project your attention all the way into the depression and suddenly I'm depressed. It can be thoughts. You know, there are thoughts that are present. And you can be the looker looking at the thoughts, or you can project yourself all the way into the thought stream, and they're my thoughts. When you project your attention all the way into an object, so much so that you lose the sense of looker, and you're fully identified with the object, that is the ego. So 551A says, ego is object focus. Object focus is not focused on objectlessness, right? And that self that you experienced a moment ago, if you did this experiment with me, and you know, I still have little marks on my finger from when I was doing it, so I was really squeezing the heck out of myself. So I have little marks here. So if you did that with me and you felt that pain and then you looked at that pain with me and you got the sense of that self that is beyond pain, really. You could never feel pain. It's beyond pain, but it was the looker looking at the pain in the body, right? That self is not an object. You can't look at that self. You can look from that self, but you cannot look at that self. It's not an object. You can look at the mind because it's an object. You can look at emotions because they're objects. You can look at the body. You can look at pain. You can certainly look at appearances that are outside of the body in the world. But you can't look at the self. It's objectlessness. But when you project your attention fully into the object so that you're identified with the object, whether it's a thought, whether it's an emotion, whether it's pain, whether it's just any worldly experience, when you project yourself fully into that object and you lose the attention or you lose the awareness of the looker, you can't be both at the same time. You can't be aware of the looker and be identified with the object, projected into the object simultaneously. It is literally one or the other. So again, ego is object focus. Object focus is not focused on objectlessness. So it's merely the act of projecting your attention into an object that causes you to lose the sense of your true self. It is literally the act of projecting your attention fully into an object that causes you to lose the sense of your true self. And most people live in this world fully object focused all of the time. All of the time. So there is never any sense of the self. And spiritual practice is really about learning to let go of being object focused. Some people call this letting go of attachments. Some people call this letting go of beliefs. I'm sure there's other ways of describing it that I'm not thinking of right now. Letting go of desires. But what all of these things are doing is it's letting go of projecting your attention into an object. So much so that, of course, you're identified with the object and you forget who you are. You forget that you're the looker. That sense is completely lost. Ego is object focus. Object focus is not focused on objectlessness. Therefore, object focus disregards objectlessness and strengthens ego, which is object focus. So the more time I spend projecting my attention into an object, the more time I'm going to spend projecting my attention into an object, right? It reinforces itself. It reinforces that habit. To weaken ego and return to realization of that which is present, reduce attention on objects. to weaken ego and return to realization of that which is present, reduce attention on objects. Do not necessarily look for something else to put attention on. Now, this says necessarily because there are kind of phases we go through in the awakening process. And, this really kind of depends on where you're at. And this is what each one needs to know for him or herself. This depends on where you're at. For example, in the teachings of Inner Ramana, there is a recommendation that you put your attention on the mantra, I am that I am. Take your attention off of your thoughts and put your attention on the mantra. Well, the mantra in that case is, it is still an object, but it's a bridge. When you're doing your course lessons and you're putting your attention on your course lesson, that's putting your attention on an object, but it's a bridge. It's a bridge away from the ego. So at one phase in this process, what we're really doing is we're removing our attention from, fully focused ego objects, and we're putting our attention on different objects that actually point away from the ego. They're right-minded objects, they're corrective objects. They're still objects, but they point away from the ego. But then at some point, when this sense of self is clear enough, what we can do is take our attention off of objects entirely and put our attention on the self. Sometimes this is called awareness watching awareness, or attention watching attention. But there's actually a way to pay attention to the self even though you can't see it, even though it's not an object. There's a way of paying attention to it. And when you get that sense of how to do that, that's actually more helpful than putting your attention on a mantra or a course lesson or something else. It's more helpful to just place your attention with the self. But if you can't do that, then it's most helpful to place your attention on a corrective object, like a mantra or a course lesson. To weaken ego and return to realization of that which is present, reduce attention on objects. Do not necessarily look for something else to put attention on. Become object aware, seeing objects as objects, and then remove attention from them, placing it within the self. So this is teaching how to make that shift. If you don't know how to naturally shift from being projected into an object to being focused on the self, this is telling you how you do it. So if I have a thought, and I'm sitting here thinking thoughts about somebody and some story, and I'm thinking thoughts, and I'm thinking thoughts, and then I realize what I'm doing. I realize I've projected myself fully into this thought stream. Then this first step is I notice, but the thoughts are objects. And I step back and I watch them as the looker. When I step back and I watch them as the looker, I'm now returning myself to the sense of self. Once I've returned myself to the sense of self, I now turn my attention fully on the looker. So it's kind of a step back, turn around process, right? I'm projected into the thoughts. I'm caught up in a story, projected into the thoughts. And then I realize what I'm doing. I step back. I notice those are objects. I can look at them. Who's looking, right? What's looking? I get that sense, and then I turn the attention onto that. So to weaken the ego and return to realization of that which is present, reduce attention on objects. Do not necessarily look for something else to put attention on. Become object aware, seeing objects as objects, and then remove attention from them, placing it within the self. So first become object aware, which means notice that is an object, what's looking at the object, and then turn the attention onto what's looking. I'll just read the entire journal entry one more time and then we'll move on. Ego is object focus. Object focus is not focused on objectlessness. Therefore, object focus disregards objectlessness and strengthens ego, which is object focus. To weaken ego and return to realization of that which is present, reduce attention on objects. Do not necessarily look for something else to put attention on. Become object aware, seeing objects as objects, and then remove attention from them, placing it within the self. And that's really what we did, by the way, with the pinching exercise, for those of you who were here for that. When you were pinching yourself and causing the pain, I then had you look at the pain. That's when you were becoming aware of the pain as an object. And then after you looked at the pain and became aware of the pain as the object, then you were able to look at the self or sense the self. You can't really look at it, but you were able to sense the self, sense the looker, and then you could put your attention on the looker. So it's just a method of making yourself aware of the self. First, you notice the object as an object. Then you look for what's looking at the object. And then you turn your attention toward the looker, which is turning your attention towards yourself. All right, so why don't we scroll down? If you're in 551A with me, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 551B. First, I'm going to read Muru Gunnar's quote, which is being contemplated again. That quote is this: as long as we do not free ourselves from the state of inattention, in which the unified state of the self that exists as pure consciousness is subverted through the ego, the state of love that is the fullness of the real, free of all differentiation, will not be experienced in the heart. So again, what Muru Gunnar is saying is, as long as we remain object-focused, we're going to know different objects as reality. That's how it's going to seem to us. As long as we are object-focused, we are going to know different objects as reality. But if we become focused on the self, the objectlessness, we're going to lose that sense of differentiation. So let's look at the journal, 551B. Love knows no object. Love does not differentiate. One problem with the word love is that people think they know what it is. And most people think of love as an emotion. You know, I love you. It's an emotion. It's how I feel about you. But in true spirituality, when the word love is used, that's not what it's talking about. The word love is referring to that which is totally beyond the possibility of judgment. The word love is just a label that is referring to that which is totally beyond the possibility of judgment. And you can see why that word might be used to refer to something that is totally beyond the possibility of judgment, because we know judgment, you know, is what defines what is not love, right? In the world, judgment defines what is love and what is not love. It is love to remember me on Mother's Day or to remember my mother on Mother's Day. It is not love to forget, right? But really, that's not love because that's judgment. Even the remembering. Love, with the capital L, true love, is beyond judgment entirely. It's beyond even the possibility of judgment. And that, again, was that looker. If you really got a strong sense of that looker, and you really looked at that looker, you saw that that looker was not saying this pain is good or this pain is bad. That looker had no comment on the pain whatsoever. That looker was totally beyond even the possibility of judgment. And the more you look at that looker, the more you realize it can't judge. It's just beyond, you know, judgment somehow comes after the looker. Judgment is an idea laid on top of the looker, but it's not the looker itself. And because it is totally beyond even the possibility of judgment, judgment cannot happen at that level of self. That level of self is called love. Love knows no object. Well, what does know objects? What knows objects? If you look around your room right now, wherever you're at, and you identify the objects that you look at, what is identifying those objects? When your eyes lands on something and something tells you that is a blank, and then your eyes land on something else and something says that is a blank, what is telling you this? Can you look at that thought? Can you look at the thought? Like if I look, I have a cup here, and the cup actually has fruit on it. I see a pear, a grape, an apple, and leaves on the cup. Well, can I look at the idea in my mind that is a pear? Yes, I can. I can look at the pear on the cup, but I can also look at the idea in the mind that is saying that is a pear. It seems more subtle. The idea in the mind seems much more subtle than the cup or the pear on the cup, but I can look at that subtle idea that is a pear. So what is looking at the subtle idea? And does it have any thoughts in it? Does it have any ideas in it at all? And the answer I see is no. It has no ideas in it at all. It can look at ideas. It can be aware of ideas. It can even understand ideas. But it has no ideas of its own. And so if it has no ideas, that means it knows no object. It has no ideas of its own. It requires the mind to define things and have ideas. So love, that which is beyond judgment, knows no object because it has no judgments. Love does not differentiate. Two little bitty sentences. But we could spend a lot of time, if we wanted to, looking at those sentences and then looking at that which those sentences point to. Strengthening our sense of that which is beyond judgment beyond the possibility of judgment even, that has no ideas of its own, that is aware but does not differentiate, because the differentiation is happening at a different level. And if we spend a lot of time looking at those sentences, our sense of that self, that true self, grows stronger. Typically, we don't spend time being aware of those sentences or those ideas. We don't spend time being aware of the looker. We're too busy being projected into the ideas itself. We're too busy being identified with the ideas, identified with the activity of the mind, the activity of the body, identified with the emotions, identified with the story. And the funny thing is that looker's there the whole time. Non-judgmental awareness, always present. If you didn't have non-judgmental awareness first, you couldn't have anything else. It really, really is very much like, you know, the example we've all probably heard, but it's just a great example. It really, really is very much like the light in the movie projector, right? The light in the movie projector is just clear light. But then you put the film in the movie projector, that's like the mind. And the light shines through the film and creates appearances. And if you're really caught up in the appearances, you don't even think about the light. But the appearances themselves could not happen without the light. You know, without non-judgmental awareness, without that non-doing awareness, it doesn't do anything. Without that non-doing awareness, there couldn't be any type of activity at all. There couldn't be mind activity. There couldn't be emotional activity. There couldn't be physical activity. There couldn't be world activity. So that awareness is the ultimate, or the absolute, or the real. It's what's always present all the time, as everything shifts and change comes and goes. And yet, we spend almost no time paying attention to it. And it never changes. It never moves, not one iota. It's always here. It's always now. I said to someone, I was teaching the same idea to someone, and I said, I was identifying with it, so instead of it, I was saying I. And I said, I'm always here now. And the person with their metaphysical knowledge said, you mean you're never here now? I mean, you know, thinking, you know, the world is not real and you're not the personality or the body, so you're not here. But I'm talking about the real self that's always here now. Always present. No matter what else appears to be going on or not going on, this is always here now. The ultimate I, even before the I thought. The I that doesn't think I, but it is more intimately what I am than the I thought. Love knows no object, because love is beyond the possibility of judgment. Love does not differentiate, primarily because love does not think. Love is beyond thinking. Why don't we scroll down and go to 550. Oh, nope, just 552. There is no 551C. Let's go to 552A. And what I will do is read, ooh, boy, this is a long one. You may have to close your eyes to listen to this quote. Is this all one sentence? No, at least it's two sentences. So my English teacher wouldn't be quite as upset as if it had been one long sentence. Okay, so here's the next quote from Murugunar. The enlightened state, in which the grace and wisdom of the self is directly experienced, will not come into being unless we separate ourselves from the illusory world of the divided mind so that it can no longer exist. Therefore, we must thoroughly investigate and comprehend our own self so that the hostility of the ghost-like ego that brings with it the torment of an understanding based on differentiation may cease. I'll take a sip of tea and then read that one more time. The enlightened state, in which the grace and wisdom of the self is directly experienced, will not come into being unless we separate ourselves from the illusory world of the divided mind so that it can no longer exist. Therefore, we must thoroughly investigate and comprehend our own self so that the hostility of the ghost-like ego that brings with it the torment of an understanding based on differentiation may cease. One thing that I find really, really interesting about this particular quote is that Murugunar is saying we need to separate ourselves from the illusory world of the divided mind. And really, when you talk about the jokes on us, folks, what we do is we make ourselves one with the illusory world, the illusory world of the divided mind. We make ourselves one with it by projecting our attention fully into it. But the funny thing is, when we make ourselves one with it, the sense is a sense of separation. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? Let me give you an example of what I mean. You know, there's some story going on. Somebody's talking bad about me. Somebody doesn't like me. And I'm worried all of the time about this person talking bad about me and what they're saying to other people and turning people against me. You see, I'm projecting my attention fully into that story and I'm becoming one with the story. And yet, through becoming one with the story, there's a me, there's a person talking about me, there's all of the others and what do they think? By projecting my attention into the story and becoming one with the story, the sense that I get from the story is a strong sense of separation. So because I'm projecting myself into the story and becoming one with the story and then getting a sense of separation, what I now need to do in order to let go of that sense of separation is separate myself from the story, which is recalling my attention back towards myself, right? No longer projecting my attention into the story. So as Murugunar says, the enlightened state in which the grace and wisdom of the self is directly experienced will not come into being unless we separate ourselves from the illusory world of the divided mind so that it can no longer exist. Why don't we look at my journal entry at 552A? Ego separates. And yet it is this exact same practice that awakens one from the dream of ego. Separate yourself from ego. Know yourself. Abide as self. Again, ego separates. And yet it is this exact same practice that awakens one from the dream of ego. Separate yourself from ego. Know yourself. Abide as self. Jay says, is the we separate ourselves talking about our point of attention shifting to the observer? Yes. And in fact, you can hear that in the last part of this journal entry. Separate yourself from the ego. Know yourself, abide as self. It's kind of like a three-step process. It's really the same three-step process we talked about before. It's just worded a little differently. But, you know, I'm all caught up in the story, right? I'm one with the story. And because my attention is one with the story, I see a you and a me and an everybody else. All right? I need to separate myself from that, pull my attention out of the story, and notice that it is an object. I'm looking at the story. Now, what is looking? I start to know myself when I start asking that question. What is looking at the story? Now I'm getting that sense of myself. And now I can abide as myself. Do you see? So really, you know, what these quotes are teaching tonight is a process that we can actually practice anytime, anywhere. And again, if you forget, just pinch yourself, like we did at the beginning of this hour. Pinch yourself, look at the pain, remember who you are, and then look at the story, or look at the emotion, or look at the apparent situation in the world and notice what's looking, and then look at the looker, right? Separate yourself from the ego. Take your attention out of object focus. Remember, 551 defined ego as object focus. Ego is just simply being, having our attention so projected into something that we don't know we aren't it. That's often called being identified with, right? Identified with a thought, identified with an emotion, identified with a circumstance. But it's projecting our attention so fully into it that we don't know we aren't it. We've made ourselves one with it. The ego is object focus. You see? So we need to separate ourselves from the ego, which means separate ourselves from object focus. Separating myself from object focus is what am I and what is the object? Right? The object is this story about people talking about me. What am I? I'm the one looking at the story. When I separate myself from the object, I'm no longer object focused, which means I'm no longer in ego or no longer in the wrong mind. Then I get a sense of my true self. I turn my attention to my true self and I abide as that. Okay, here's Jay with fancy words, which let's see if I can follow this. Are the samskaras, the areas which are still caught in the story, unprocessed experiences? Well, of course, Jay is reading The Untethered Soul right now. And so, you know, when you're really focused on any spirituality that is intended to help you, what happens is that spirituality gives you a temporary filter, but it's a corrective filter. And everything you hear with that filter in mind, right? So Jay right now is listening with the filter of The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. So this is where his question is coming from. Is that not true, Jay? Yeah, absolutely. And that always happens. That always happens, and that's perfect. You know, if you were studying the course day in and day out, your question would have sounded more like a course question. So whatever we're really focused on, that creates a filter. But if it's a corrective material, it's a corrective filter. So Jay's question, are the samskaras the areas where are still caught in the story, where we are still caught in the story? Unprocessed experiences. Yes. The answer is yes. fact, one of the things that's happening at Choose Again, which I'll talk about in the next hour when we're in the member meeting, but one of the things that's happening at Choose Again is, you know, emotions are coming up. It's just amazing to watch. You know, you just have these people sitting around in a circle and Diedrich starts talking and stuff starts coming up. Obviously, what we call Holy Spirit is there helping because so much stuff is coming up. People are grabbing Kleenexes and crying, and it's just amazing to watch. But what happens when stuff starts to come up is Diedrich has a process that he uses to take them into the feeling and as far back into the feeling as they can go. And every single person, even people who say, I can't remember my childhood, every single person can remember the first time they felt that feeling, where they were, what they were doing, and what they thought. That would be a samskara that was identified with, a projection that they went completely into, right? And they never left it. They repressed it. They never left it. They believed that story. They believed what they thought that story meant about them. They repressed it and they kept it forever. And then, you know, it keeps showing up over and over and over again. And so it seems to continue to prove itself. This is where we get into the loop of experience. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think, right? It just keeps happening and happening and happening. And now they're sitting around 40, 50, 60, maybe even 70 years old. And this childhood imprint is still there because there never was a separation from the story. There never was a noticing it's just an object. There never was a noticing who was looking. And so now they're sitting here in Colorado doing that with Diedrich, right? So ego separates, and yet it is this exact same practice that awakens one from the dream of ego. Separate yourself from ego, from object focus. Separate yourself from being projected completely into the story. Know yourself, sense the looker, and then abide as self. Be the looker, right? Why don't we scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 552B. Separate from ego by detaching from the stories of the world. How does one live in the world without attachment to it? Inward focus. With inward focus, actions are taken care of, but mind attachment is absent. Actions are free because concern is not involved. Yeah, Dolores. I saw Jay's comment about Mrs. Brown first. I thought, huh, that's funny that he's talking about Mrs. Brown because Dolores was talking about Mrs. Brown the other day. And then I look up two lines and I see that Dolores commented on Mrs. Brown today. But yes, Dolores, Mrs. Brown is an excellent example. Dolores, do I have permission to tell your story about Mrs. Brown? I'll wait for you to respond. If I don't have your permission, it is totally okay. Yes, I do. Okay, for those of you who do not know Dolores, she is African American, which is an important part of the story. Mrs. Brown, by the way, despite the name, was white or Caucasian. Okay. And when Dolores was 5 or 6, I don't remember the exact age, but very young, she was in Mrs. Brown's class. And Mrs. Brown gave lollipops to all of the other children who happened to be white. And Mrs. Brown did not give a lollipop to Dolores. And Dolores, cute little, sweet little, innocent Dolores, even, you know, maybe she thought Mrs. Brown just didn't notice her. I don't know exactly what you thought at that point, Dolores, but she went up and asked Mrs. Brown for one. And even though she could tell that there still were lollipops, Mrs. Brown told her there were no more lollipops. And of course, sweet little Dolores carried home a message from that incident, which she still carries with her today. And the message is the message that many of us pick up in our childhood and carry with us all the way up until today. The idea is somehow that there's something wrong with me. I'm not as good as everyone else, right? I'm bad. Yeah. And so what happens, again, we identify with these stories as very young children, right? We don't know any better. But then we carry them in us our whole life, and then more and more experiences keep proving that to us over and over and over again, and it kind of snowballs into this really big, big, big thing. You know, lots of people at Choose Again today are talking about when they first decided that something was terribly wrong with them. In some way they were defective. They didn't even know what, but just in some way they were less than others, not as good as others, hideous, monstrous. These are words people are using at the retreat. 21 people, 21 participants, all with that same feeling about themselves. And you see, our attention went all the way into that story, every one of us. At one time or another, one circumstance or another, our attention went all the way into that story. We projected ourselves fully into it. We believed it about ourselves, and we've never left. We've covered it up in a lot of different ways. Some of us have become very, very successful as a way to cover up how insignificant we feel on the inside, how much less than. Some of us have turned to alcohol and drugs or sex, right? Food. Gambling, couch potato, drowning ourselves in the television. We've avoided looking at it. You know, there's all kinds of responses to it, but what we haven't done is separate ourselves from the story and notice it's just an object and look for our real self. That's what we haven't done. That's what we need to do. So again, that takes us back to 552B. Separate from ego by detaching from the stories of the world. Now what happens often when we see that guidance, that we need to detach from the story of the world, right, is something in us, and we can call that ego because ego is object focused. So the part of our mind that believes in object focus says, well, if I'm detached, how am I going to survive? If I don't worry about money, if I don't worry about my kids, if I don't worry about my health, if I'm not thinking about these things and paying attention to these things and taking care of these things, how am I going to survive? So the object-focused ego believes you need to be object-focused in order to survive. And so the first argument that it comes up with is, how am I going to survive if I'm not object-focused? And the answer to that is really intuition. One of the things that is happening at Choose Again right now is there is one person who, well, I'm just going to say she got really, really scared. Really, really scared. Because she believes the same thing the rest of us believe. She's the scum of the earth. But she really believes she's the one, right? She's the one. And now there's this room of 21 people. They're going to be, well, 26 if you count staff. They're going to be sitting around looking at this. And oh my God, the idea of her being exposed as the lowest of the low is so damn threatening. That she ran in her room, shut her door, refuses to come out, says she wants to go home, and she wants her money back. This was not the retreat she thought it was. She wants her money back. And so the question came to me, the organizer, are you going to give her money back? Intuition answered that. I didn't even have to think about it. And the answer is no. No. Has nothing to do with the money. Right? Has nothing to do with the money. It's just that intuition knows giving her that out is not at all helpful. You see, you don't need to think about things. You don't need to be object-focused. You don't need to be caught up in the story. You don't need to weigh this and weigh that. You just need to pay attention to intuition. Intuition knows the answer to every question. And in fact, was it last Wednesday? I did a two-hour talk on intuition. If you haven't heard it, you can go to reginadonacres.com and look it up under recent audios. A two-hour talk on intuition. Intuition has every answer. You don't need to be object-focused. You don't need to be caught up in the story. You don't need to have your thoughts there and thinking about, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know what I would have thought about if I had been thinking, but there's so many things to think about if I had been thinking. You know, what would she think of me if I didn't give her money back? What would other people think of me if I didn't give her money back? What would the board of directors at Awakening Together think if I did give her money back? Would we still make the profit we need to make? Would we lose? I mean, there's so many things. I could be so caught up. I could still be spinning around. Do I give this person the money back? Spinning and being all caught up in guilt and not knowing what to do. But intuition was just boom. No. No. And I know why. It's not helpful. It's not helpful. And that's the funny thing. It's love not giving her money back. It's not helpful. Right? So intuition can answer every question. So separate from ego by detaching from the stories of the world. How does one live in the world without attachment to it? Inward focus, or I call that now intuition. With inward focus, actions are taken care of, but mind attachment is absent. I don't have to go into the story. Actions are free because concern is not involved. You just know that you're doing what you are to do. Actions are free, right? I'm not caught up in any story. There's no guilt. Not worried about what anybody else thinks of me. Not worried about whether I'm being successful or whether I'm being bad, right? It takes all of that object focus out of it because it comes from a different place than object focus. Why don't we scroll down? We'll go ahead and look at 552C. This is kind of a nice summary of what we've talked about tonight, actually. It's a great place to end tonight's discussion. Become familiar with self. Differentiate between false self and true self. Disregard false self and let it wither away. Stay in true self. Abide as that. Remain at home. And this, again, this is a spiritual practice that you can carry anywhere, anytime, with anyone, and no one even needs to know you're doing it, right? Anywhere, anytime, with anyone, and no one even needs to know you're doing it. As soon as you find out you're caught up in something, whether it's an appearance, a mental story, an emotional experience, and you're fully identified with it because you've projected your attention all the way into it. Stop. Pause. Notice it's an object. Notice that you are looking at it, just like you looked at the pain in your finger at the beginning of this hour. Notice you're looking at it. Then notice who's looking, what's looking. And then place your attention there or identify with that. Not a mental identification, but a placing your attention, your awareness, your beingness, your isness there. And the more you do that, the more you become familiar with that as you. And the more you'll begin to naturally hang out there as you. You'll start to notice you are detached. You're not having to detach yourself. You just are detached, right? You'll notice you're not having to look for intuition or ask intuition. You're simply being moved by intuition. The thinking, the stories aren't happening, but the intuition is telling you where to go and what to do. Become familiar with self. Differentiate between the false self and the true self. Know the difference between the two. Disregard the false self. Let it wither away. Stay in true self. Abide as that. Remain at home. Okay, and so with that said, what I'm going to do is play a song and take a little tiny break, and then when I come back, it will still be me. It's going to be me all night long. But I'm going to change hats. And when I come back, the hat that I'm going to be wearing is the President Minister of Awakening Together, and we're going to have our monthly member meeting. So here's a nice little song to listen to as a transition. This is by Denise Hagen. It is called I Am Everything.
I saw you on the street today, and you tried so hard to hide. I was lying at your feet today, but you didn't blink an eye. I didn't want a fortune, I was happy with loose change. I know that I look desperate, and I'm sorry I look strange. And yes, it's true, I drink the poet's wine. But I have held the greatest banquet of all time. I am the left, I am the right. I am the day and I am the night. I am the poison chalice, I am the blessed wine. I am the truth, I am the lie. I am the love that cannot. And when you choose to see me with both eyes, soon enough you'll come to realize I am everything and I have always been. You find me in the youngest child and in the oldest man. I am the voice inside your head that lets you know you can become the greatest vision that you have ever seen. For nothing is so difficult as first it seems. So set your heart on what you'd like to see. For simply as you think it, so shall it be, so shall it be. I am the left, I am the right, I am the day and I am the night. I am the poison chalice, I am the blessed wine. I am the truth, I am the lie, I am the love that cannot die. And when you choose to see me with both eyes, then soon enough you'll come to realize that I am everything and I have always been. So here's the invitation, come step into your life. I am the truth, I am the lie, I am the love that cannot die. And when you choose to see me with both eyes, soon enough you will come to realize that I am everything and I have always been. Yes, I am everything and I